Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you are listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is an old friend of Jesse's, and I'm going to let her do the introduction.
Yes. So some of you who've been listening for a little bit might know that I went to a musical theater school, because that's a thing you can do. And definitely a profession we should all follow. It was not a good idea, but it was fun. I made a lot of really incredible friends and had a blast. And one of the people that I met was Harvey Guillen, who is here with us today.
Hi.
Welcome. And,
thank you. Thank you for having me.
The crazy thing is living with your career, what's now, geez,
I guess, wow.
12, 13 years, something like that?
Yeah.
It's something. So, I was 19 when I was at
MDA. Yeah, we were at the same time.
Yeah. That's crazy. A long time. From you going to Japan.
Yes. So I didn't finish the actual course.
Neither of us did.
I did not finish. We were told not to audition and not to go out for parts, which is funny because you go to school to get trained to actually book a role.
Yeah.
And I remember. I just didn't think that applied to me for some reason. I was like, I want to get experience. I want to go out there and see if I'm good enough to audition. And I went out for a musical that was in Japan, and I booked it. And I went to the dean, and I was like, I booked this. And they're like, we want you to stay. And I was like, what? I was like, I booked it. I literally
I did the thing.
Yeah, I did the thing
we're here
like,
to
no.
do.
And they're like, we'll give you more scholarship. I was like, I'm already on scholarship. And they're like, we'll give you more money. And I was like, you're going to pay me to stay here and say no to a job? It's because I, you know, looking back, I was like, oh, that's how they get people to come to the school.
Yes.
That's how I went to the school. I looked at the book. And I saw people on Broadway, and I was like, whoa.
Jesse Tyler Ferguson. There's
Marissa Taylor. Yeah.
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 Now, if you don't know Harvey's name right this minute as you're listening, I have a feeling you're going to get to know him pretty soon, because he is one of the starring cast members in an exciting new show based on that incredible movie, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
A hilarious movie.
If you haven't seen it, please watch it. It's so good.
And it's going to be a new TV series on FX that is making its debut at the South by Southwest Festival in Austin, Texas. And that's a great launch pad for almost anything.
Yeah.
Certainly a new TV series with this kind of anticipation built into it. So, Harvey, you're on the cusp here.
Yeah.
I'm on the cusp. I like it. I'll be on the cusp.
But
I like it.
You've been working for such a long time.
I've been working. Yeah, I feel like I look back and I think, you know, everything is a stepping stone. And you look back and the things you have now, the things you wish for in the past, and never forget that. So, but I've been working, you know, I was a series regular on a couple of shows. And I did Eye Candy. I've recurred on The Magicians. I've done several spots on different shows, and looking back, I was like, wow, it's all just piled up, you know? And we stay in touch this whole time. You've always been so supportive and so great about reaching out and be like, I'm so proud of you. And like, I feel like we just started, but it's not. It's been like, people are like, wow, you're so lucky to be on this new show. What a Hollywood story. And I was like, that's not a Hollywood story. It's like, you put in the work, you know? And
our favorite phrase is overnight sensation.
Like, yeah.
Because we like to remind people frequently that overnight is very rarely overnight. And most people have worked for 10 or 20 years.
You just haven't noticed them.
You just don't
know. Yeah. And I feel like I've been getting that a lot, where people see me on the street and think, hey, you're that guy. I've literally have people who come up and they can't put the project to my face, but they know they see me in something. So that's always funny when someone goes, you're no, and I go down a list. I have to go down my resume, and I'm like, do you watch kid shows? Do you watch Nickelodeon? Do you watch MTV? Are you, what demographic are you? Do you watch comedy? And it's just like, I have to go down a list. That's what it was.
That's
the commercial. And I was like, that commercial was 10 years ago.
And they're like, oh, I love that commercial.
Hey, recognition is recognition.
Yeah, that's recognition is recognition. I'll take it. But if the only true Hollywood story aspect of this whole adventure has been this project, actually, because I booked this by going to Wine and Cheese Night. And the way that came about was really interesting. I almost didn't go to it. So rule of thumb is always go to Wine and Cheese Night when invited.
Note self.
My friend Mimi Michaels was in town from New York, and she was getting out of that storm they had last year around this time. And she said, come to my brother's house. We're going to have wine and cheese. And just together, a couple of friends. It was just her, her husband, her baby, her brother, and her best friend, Yvonne, from high school. And I get to this wine and cheese night. It's a small group. And we're not talking about the industry, nothing about the business. We're just being, you know, ourselves and being human. The next day, I get a text from an unknown number, and it's Yvonne, her best friend. And I said, oh, hey, you got my number. She's like, yeah, you're so funny. I think you should audition for my fiance's new show. And I'm like, what? First of all, I don't do those films anymore. They're illegal. Okay. And she looked at me. She said, what? Or she texted me. She said, what? And I was like, no, just kidding. I'm joking, but I didn't play on the text. And she said, I'm serious. You should move quickly, though. They're booking someone for this role this week. And I said, what show is this? And they're like, What We Do in the Shadows. And I said, isn't that a movie? Because by this point, I had not seen the movie. It was on cue. In line to watch next on my Amazon. Like, literally, it was that night. I'm not even joking. That night, I debated to go to Wine and Cheese Night, and I looked at my list on Amazon and on Netflix.
All right, hang on a second. Just let me take out a moment here. Note to self, go to Wine and Cheese Night.
Right. Write it down.
All right.
Cheese, okay. Double E right there.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And so basically, I said, okay, so I'm going to go with it. And I said, who's casting this? It's Allison Jones, who, if you know, Allison has cast everything, The Office, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Golden Girls, Bridesmaid. And I was like, I need to go meet with her. Mm-hmm. I've never officially met with her. And I was like, I want to go meet. They get me an audition. I get the script, and the character's 20 years older. And I was like, oh, just as luck would have it, I'm going to go in for a role that I'm too young for. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go in there, and I'm going to do it the way I think it should be done. If he was my age, that's all you can do, right? And my goal was to go and meet Allison. I show up to the audition. Allison is not there. She's in London auditioning for my part. And so I'm like, no, the whole point was to meet her. And she's not there. So the casting associate was like, no, it's okay. We'll just mic you, put on the mic and audition you and whatnot. After I did the audition, I remember one of those moments, and you can relate to this, when, like, as a performer and an actor, you do something, it's almost out of body. So after I was done, I didn't realize I was done. I looked up and I said, are we done? And he looked at me, he's like, yes, you're done. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I walked out of the room, and he said, Harvey, wait. And I was like, oh, I thought he was going to say, you're it, kid. You're the star, you know? And I was like, oh, my God, here I go. And it's like the microphone.
Right.
And he takes out the microphone off my lapel, and I go, oh, boy. And I walk out, and I just didn't know what I did. And I text my manager, and he called me right away. He said, how'd it go? And I said, I don't know. I don't remember what I did. And he goes, you don't remember what you did? And he's like, no, I just don't remember what I did, but I hope it was okay. 4 hours later, they had shown it to Jermaine Tyka, FX, Scott Rudin, Garrett Bash, who Garrett was Yvonne's fiance, the one who got
Let's identify all those people, though. You're talking about Taika Waititi.
Taika Waititi.
And Jermaine Clement.
Yep.
And the...
The executive producers, created, and Scott Rudin.
Scott Rudin, who is like uber producer.
Yeah. Yeah.
All these people, FX, had signed up.
Yeah,
yeah. So they had all checked off on my audition tape to test. And I thought, what? I thought I was too young. They're like, well, they love the angle that you took with it. So if you do book it, they'll make it younger. Mm-hmm. And I said, great. You never know, you know? And actually, I've made a career out of going in for roles that aren't right for me. I literally have. I got in for, you know, when I shot the internship with Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, that role was not written for me. I remember going in and knowing that role was not me. But I went in and said, this is what I can do with the role. And I remember doing it, and Sean Levy, like, just laughing on the floor. And just, I thought, you know, if anything, he got a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
And I left the room. 2 weeks later, I was shooting in New Orleans, and I got a call that Sean had written the part for me in the movie. And I was off to Atlanta, Georgia to shoot for 2 months with, like, people. So I've gone for roles, and, like, you know, the same thing happened with, like, Thundermans when I was at a Nickelodeon show. It was a one-day guest star, two lines, and I just finished the internship, and my team was like, you shouldn't go in for it. You know, you're too good for that. It's two lines. I was like, I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not too good for anything. You know, I'm like, I started from nothing. You know what I mean? Like, literally nothing. And I was just like, I want to go in for it because he's family, you know, and family never goes away. And so I went in for this two-line part, and he's a cousin. He recurred for 4 seasons on a show because I said, don't ever turn your back on anything because you think you're above it. You don't know what gems are going to come from, like, you know, going into a deep hole of, like, darkness, you know? It's just like, you never know what's at the other side of the rainbow kind of thing. And it has been, like, my motto for my whole career, and actually has led me to where I'm at in a Wine and Cheese Night. Leads me to a series lead on an FX show. I never tested for the show. One day, we're supposed to know when the test was happening, and I got a call on a Sunday from this 18-digit number. And I was like, who keeps calling me? I was like, I had a sign. Just give me a sign, God. Why? And it's like the phone kept ringing. I kept ignoring it. And finally, my sister, pick up the phone. It's ignoring. It's annoying me. And I was like, okay. I pick up the phone. And it's, hey, is this Javi? And it's like, yeah. Hey, it's Tyka and Jermaine. And you auditioned for us, and you're the mate. And I was like, what?
I would have had a damn heart attack.
And my sister, who loves Thor, like she's just screaming next to me.
Taika directed Thor right
now. Yeah. And she's just screaming and she's driving. And I'm like, I had it on speaker and I was like, and she looked over, she's all, and she screamed, but without screaming, just making the facial expression. And I was like, oh, thank you, Mr. Taika. I lost a word. I was like, what? I didn't even test. I booked it off the tape. They hadn't even met me and I booked it off the tape.
Jeez.
So that's how I got the show, guys.
And not only that, Jesse showed me the trailer for it last night, and you essentially
host. You're the very first thing.
You host the trailer.
I love it.
Normally, you're like, oh, my friend's in the show. Let me, and then you have to yell. There they are
in the background.
Just turn it on.
Yeah.
Just hit play, and you found him. He's right there.
Yeah. The writers have done a really good job that everyone's like storylines are so like important that like there's no like garnish, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like everyone's like a main dish, which is so great. Mm-hmm. And for so long, especially being in this industry and being, you know, Latino and, you know, being who I am, just like I felt like I was the comic relief. I was always the garnish. It was always never the main course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for so long, I was like, I'm tired of being the garnish. You know, I want to be the steak. I want to be
That's your memoir, my darling.
Yeah.
tired of being the garnish.
And this has been a really great experience, and working with them has been great. They give you such like freedom in the improv. Like we literally had one take where it was 22 minutes long for, it should have been a half a page of dialogue, and it took 22 minutes just of improv because we could. And everyone's so good, it's like playing hot potato and no one drops it.
Yeah.
Just keep tossing and tossing and tossing, and we can go all day. Literally, they'll just let the camera roll. Like, you know, it's just like keep going. And it's such a different experience because usually you're on a set where it's like, no, the line is this and you can't go out of that, you know?
Well, Taika came to my class at USC with Thor Ragnarok and he said, they had so much great material on every scene they shot because of that methodology he uses, you know, from his years of comedy improv and all that, that he had to make these tough decisions. Which version am I using of this scene? Which line of dialogue do I think actually helps the film or is funnier? And do I want the laugh here? Do I not want the laugh here?
Because Chris Hemsworth is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
He's very funny.
I think he's really smart in the way that he shoots is because he has such great material. He lets you do like four different takes, right? Mm. And they can all be different from each other and they vary. So one can be, I remember doing a scene where play this more really endearing, really soft. And I said, okay. And then play this one like it's a throwaway. You don't care. Play this one like it's like life or death. And I'm thinking, why would you need every emotion? You know, it's because you can take the storyline any way you want.
Wow.
So when you cut and paste, I don't even know really authentically what Guillermo's story will be because we played each scene so many different ways that he could be, is he becoming evil? Is he becoming
That's so
this, like, is he a martyr? Is he because he's playing it so different ways that the editing will let you know, the actor, what direction ended up going with your character?
Yeah. Well, since we're on the subject, and we are, describe the character.
So I play Guillermo de la Cruz, and he is a familiar to Nandor, which is the head vampire for the household, and he's been a familiar for 10 years. So as you see in the pilot, sometimes you work really hard for a company, you know, and you try to climb up the ladder, and you try to get a promotion, and they just don't see you the way you saw yourself. And that's kind of the storyline for Guillermo throughout the season, is where he starts questioning his devotion, because ideally is you become a familiar for someone who is in power and they reward you with turning you into something or with whatever that reward may be. For me, it's becoming a vampire. And that's what he's been working for. And so 10 years of service. And for them, you know, what's 10 years? You know, they're immortal.
So he's a vampire wannabe.
He's a vampire wannabe. And he's so drawn to that lifestyle and wanting to be part of that world. And as you find out in the pilot, it's just he had this obsession when he was a child and he wanted to be a vampire. And this is one step closer. He's one step away. And throughout the season, you just see how frustrating that can be when people don't recognize your hard work, you know? And sometimes I feel like everyone can relate to Guillermo because we've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all worked somewhere. We've all known, we've been in a relationship, whether romantic or friendship or something, where someone doesn't appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
And that frustration and how that can boil up and people have these like blowouts, you know? And with Guillermo, I feel like you're going to have some really nice moments. You get to see him really kind of question the choices he's made and question if this is the lifestyle that he wants to be leading.
I love it.
Oh, it sounds so promising.
I'm so excited.
This show.
It's so great. It's like the writers. We have like such great writers on the show where they just write an amazing script and you don't think it can get even better. And then they let you play with it. And they're just like, go ahead, play with it. And it's like, what? It's I like what this, you know. Sometimes we have to be like, I want to do the version of the script.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, yeah.
Please let me do it.
And it's like, okay, yeah, do that version once. And then we'll do like another one where it's fun. But that's, I think that's why, you know, Jermaine and Tyka are so brilliant at what they do is
they
because
are.
They know that works, and I've always loved that. I've always loved improv, and that was, you know, one of my favorite things growing up was taking classes for improv. But like, you don't get to play on sets as much.
Yeah.
But I think it's changing in the industry. People are giving you a little more freedom because the shows that are really kind of, I think, making an impact and are, wow, that was really great, are the ones that felt organic to watch.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Where they're like, whoa, that was great writing. Wait, was that in the script or did you do, because I can't tell. And when you can't tell, that's good television.
Yep.
That's
yeah.
good
yep.
movies. You know, it's yeah. so organic. It's not like when you look at a, you know, 1970 film and it's to the, you know, to the note or to the line. And it's just like, oh, it sounds like a robot just saying the line. You know, it just feels like, wait a minute, we got to get together. You know, it's just like, I watch like old reruns of favorite shows that I love, like the Brady Bunch and stuff, but it was so like sitcom, you know? And then now I feel like when TV is like so grounded, you're like, I can't tell if I'm supposed to laugh because it's so grounded, but it's life, you know? And it's like, this is what's great about the show. It's just grounded ridiculousness. Like it's like vampires, but it's grounded.
Right.
It's real people.
Right.
But
which the movie, that's the same, it's the same kind of vibe, and that's what's so funny about it.
Yeah.
It's a tongue-in-cheek movie that essentially never winks at the audience.
No.
It's done very straight, which is why it's so funny.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love is silence. Because it takes someone who has guts and really trusts his actors and trusts the whole thing that quiet can be the funniest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just not saying anything. And I feel like they all do that really, really well.
They're great at the cutaways, you know? Especially with Guillermo. Like they just do a cutaway and they specifically say, we're going to cut away to what your reaction is. He is the voice of the audience. So when the vampires are talking to each other and they're fighting about, you know, who left half drunk bodies in the cellar, and they're like, it's not hygienic, you know. And then they're talking about who left half drunk, you know. It's like, where did they get the alcohol? No, who left half drunk bodies in the basement? And then it's just like that dialogue, and they cut away to the human who's just like, you know, like having a conversation about half drunk. Like, this is ridiculous because if you're not a vampire, you know, to them that's reality.
Right.
But if you're not and you're just an outsider looking in, the camera and Guillermo have this like, you know, connection because sometimes the vampires forget the cameras are there. And they'll say things that they forget that there's a crew following them. And me as the human, Guillermo.
That's part of it is this kind of meta thing where they're aware that they're being filmed.
But they forget halfway through. And then they'll say something where it's like, you know, go get more bodies. And it's like, no, don't you mean go get more bodies? Yeah, then they say, it's like when you're like, you know, it's like putting out your dirty laundry out and forget that a camera crew's there.
Yeah.
You know?
So it's like the real vampires of
Staten Island. Because we live in Staten Island. The real vampires.
Staten
next
Island?
Time, that's where we're from. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, next time
it.
On the real vampires of Staten Island.
that needs to be a thing.
Yeah.
That just really needs.
And
well,
I think
it already is.
Jimmy said that's what he compared it to. He's like, it's like a reality show. Like it's just like that's what he said it was, but with like vampires.
Oh, that's great.
And
oh my God.
It's
great.
A documentary crew, and it's such a great formula. This is the first show that I worked on where I just feel so comfortable and confident with everyone just coming to play that, you know, usually you want your show to succeed, whatever show you do, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But you can only do like so many, you know, shows where it's sexy 20-something-year-olds solving sexy child murders in Miami. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the same
solving
thing.
Solving sexy child
it's just
murders.
Like, it's the same thing over and over that you're like, I want my show to succeed, but I think it's not original. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I've been on like, you know, on pilots and stuff where you're like, I really want this to succeed, but I just don't know, even for myself, that it has what it needs to.
Of course.
You said
across.
Something that struck a chord with me before about
wine and cheese.
That's embedded now in my consciousness, let me tell you. I wish I got invited to wine and cheese parties.
But
you said that you were not above, you know, going to read for a two-line part.
Yeah.
What I remember from sitting at our kitchen table many years ago is that you loved musical comedy. You loved doing theater and especially musicals. And you were working up and down the California coast, not necessarily right here in L.A. where an agent might see you or there's always that carrot being, you know, dangled in front of you. That, oh, if you should do theater here because a casting director might come and all that. You were doing theater in places that I'd never been.
Yeah.
Right.
No one has ever been.
Up and down the coastline because it was work.
Yeah.
It was work you enjoyed. It was work you wanted to be doing.
That was with Kaiser.
You know.
That was when I did educational theater with Kaiser. Now people don't know this. If you live in the West Coast, we have a hospital medical company called Kaiser Permanente. Because I don't think it's nationwide. But it's a West Coast thing. And they do, under their umbrella of community outreach, is a theater program that if you're lucky enough to live in Los Angeles and you're an actor and you don't want to work a 9-to-5 and work at a fast food joint or be a barista, I highly recommend you audition for this program. It's so great. It's full medical, like dental.
It'd be everything. Terrible if it wasn't.
If it wasn't, yeah.
excuse me. You have dental?
Yeah.
Now I'm really jealous.
Yeah. It's a great gig if you can get it. And you only work, you know, you do a show, you go to a school, you set up a set, you get in costume, mic check. It's a full musical. We have different shows ranging from elementary where we talk about bullying, healthy food choices, junior high where we talk about depression and suicide prevention. In high school, we talk about teen pregnancy and up to HIV conversations. And all
as a
straight play. So like the musicals are mostly for the elementary school kids, which is the ones I did, which I loved because these kids are like, some of these kids have never been exposed to live theater.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's a huge part of me doing it was because I remember the first time I saw a musical. And I remember that was actually why I became an actor is because I saw Annie. I remember seeing Annie on like television, like it was just like on free television on Christmas Eve or something. I remember seeing it. And I asked my mom, what was that? And she said, oh, those are kid actors. And I said, Mom, that's what I want to be. I want to be an orphan. And she looked at me.
Leading a hard knock line.
Yeah. And she looked at me. She's like, ¿qué? And she was like, no, I want to do that. I was like, no. But she put it in my head that kids like that were privileged and that you needed money for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I want to do that. And it's like, mijo, no tenemos dinero. We don't have money for that. You know, and I was like so sad and heartbroken at 6 years old that I couldn't do that. And I remember I had a fellow thespian at my elementary school who also wanted to be an actress. And she said, they're doing improv classes at the YMCA. My mom said that. And I said, I want to do that. And it was $12.50 for like an hour class. I asked my mom for the $12.50. And she said, ¿qué? No tenemos dinero. Like, we don't have money. That's money for groceries.
Yeah.
And mind you, this is like a single mom, you know, working three jobs, immigrant family. Like, we don't have that money. You know what I mean? And I asked her, can I take the class? And she said, mijo, si tú agarras el dinero, puedes hacer lo que tú quieres. Like, if you get the money, you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, great. And I'm going to do it. And I said, oh, shoot, I'm not like a teenager. I can't make money. Like, I'm 6 years old. And I remember walking home from school with her one day. And there was a guy going through trash cans. And I said, what is that guy doing? And he's like, vende los botes. And he sells the cans. And I was like, you make money off aluminum cans? And she said, yeah. I ran into her closet, got a wire hanger, unhooked it, and went through trash cans and got aluminum cans. And it took me 2 weeks to raise $6.62. Not enough. It took me another 2 weeks to raise the remainder money. It took me a month to raise the money to take the 1 hour class for improv. I took the 1 hour class with her, which by the way, my friend's mom just gave her $20, let her keep the change. I didn't have that luxury. So I remember just after the class, I was so hyped and I had this, it had a crackle to it that I just loved. And I said, I love that. All we did was run around as bears and lions and whatnot. It was improv, we were 6 years old. Because it divided the class into like older kids, younger kids. And I just remember saying, do I want to do this? Do I really want to do this? It took me a month. And like literally it took me a month. Like it was like all my winter break basically going into like January. You know what I mean? Raising cans, like money. And I was just like, do I want to do this? And I realized no one's ever going to give you anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go out and get it. And I realized at that moment, I was like, I had nothing. So I had nothing to lose. And so I kept collecting cans when I was 6 years old, 7 years old, paid for dance classes. I kept doing that until I could work at a swap meet when I was 9 years old. And I was a runner for a taco truck. And I used to go from the truck to the tables, roller skating. Because I would skate to the actual swap meet and then do roller skate. And then I just worked off tips. And the lady said, we all share the tips. So it's kind of like I collected the tips because they gave them to me. And I put them in a jar. And then she split them with everyone. You know. And I was like this like 8-year-old kid. I did that 8, 9. And then when I was around 9 and 10, I remember there was a guy who would drive around the neighborhood and put these posters up. He said, California teens, are you a teenager between the ages of 13 and 15 and want to make money? It was a scam. This guy was a total crook. Like he would buy dollar boxes from the 99-cent store of chocolates and you would sell them for $5 and he'd give you $1.25 and he'd pocket the rest.
Mm.
And you have a whole spiel. So that's when my acting came into play. I begged my mom to let me do it because I lied. I said I was 12. And I wasn't. I was like 9 or 10. And he looked at me and was like, and I was always short and stout. So he was like, yeah, you look like you're 12. And I was like, thanks. You know, it was like, thank you. My body helped me. And so I convinced my mom to let me do it. This guy would give us a piece of chalk. You go into a neighborhood, you get dropped off. So this is your neighborhood. You got 8 blocks to cover. And this is school nights and weekends. So the piece of chalk, you do an arrow going into the corner of the actual block with your initials. That means you're in that street. When you exit all the way out to the street, you have to chalk out. Otherwise, they can't find you. I don't have a cell phone. They can't find you. That's how they find you. Sometimes it would rain. Kids would lose their chalk. We'd be looking for kids up until 11:30 at night, looking for them on the street, saying, like, where are they? They finally, like, called home and someone picked them up, but they didn't tell us. So we've been looking for them for, like, 2 hours. And then finally we get home at 11:30 on a Wednesday night. I have to wake up to go to school the next day. Like, this was the life. So when people say it's an overnight success, you don't get a right to tell me that it's an overnight success.
No, you don't.
I've worked my butt off to get where I'm at, and I just had the, like, you know, keep eye on the prize, eye on the prize. Working with a horrible person, but it helped me with my acting. I go door to door. Hi, I'm Harvey, and I'm with California Teens, and I'm 2 boxes away from earning my, like, a spiel. It was my monologue. And in my monologue, it sometimes would end up in a dramatic pause.
Of course it was.
Dramatic would have a tear and be like, but it's okay if you can't help because, and so, you know, and people would be like, oh my God, I'm diabetic. I can't eat chocolate, but I'll give you $20, which we weren't allowed to get. We weren't allowed to get tips because he didn't get a cut of it. He told us, if I ever find out you get tips, I'll get them from you. And so I remember one time this kid, mind you, most
this sounds a little like Fagin.
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah, it was kind of scary a little bit because I saw him shake down this teenager one time when we saw him take a tip, and he was like, we don't take tips. And he shook this kid down, and I just was terrified. I was like, he's going to get me next. Like,
right,
I was like,
right.
It sounds a lot like Fagin.
Yeah. I was just like, he's going to just kill me. And I was just like, it was, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm writing this into a story, and this is going to be like my autobiography / main to a film. But it was just, sometimes I look back and I'm just like, what was in my mind that, like, I kept doing it because, and I think anyone else would have just like called it quits. Like, this isn't worth it. You know what I mean? This is not worth it. Mm-hmm. And I just think that deep down inside, I just knew that I would regret looking back and saying I didn't try everything that I could to get what I wanted. And it's paid off.
Yeah, right.
But you were right because you were enacting a role. So your instincts were good.
Yeah.
So really, Fagin helped you.
Yeah.
Is what we're saying.
I'm saying in a weird way, yeah. And I kept doing that until I could work at Burger King and, you know, became shift leader. I needed to make money quicker and be able to take classes. And I did community theater in St. Gabriel. And I just remember I needed to get work less hours and make double the money. So I found out that the local Payless was like a headquarters for Southern California, and they paid triple minimum wage. And I was like, I went up to that Payless and I said, I like to work here. Like, no, you don't understand. We like bring people out from other stores. It's an honor to work here. This is the top sellers and blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Can I work here? And they were like, you don't understand. And I was like, okay, how about this? I work on a Saturday. I don't make more than all of your people put together. You don't have to hire me. And you know, you don't pay me. And it's like, it's your Saturday. These are the top sellers. I sold more than all of them.
Of course you did.
And I got hired on the spot to work at this Payless. So now I was working only 3 hours after school, the equivalent of what I would have worked 8 hours after school at Burger King. I was only working 3, making the same amount as working 8 hours. And I could still do plays. I could still do coaching. I could still do, like, you know, I was doing choir, ballet, jazz. Like, I was doing everything because I knew that I wanted to be good at or able to do everything, especially if I was going to do musical theater, because remember, my goal was to do musical theater. And then shortly after that is when I went to Citrus, and it was a musical theater conservatory, and I went there. And after that, I went to our musical theater program. And by that point, I just felt like I was ready. Like, I was just like, something inside of me, I was like, I've been working, you know what I mean? Like, I've been working my butt off, and I just feel like I should just go do it. I just go do it. I got trained, and I remember being, you know, first semester in school with
us. Oh my God, I can't. I will never forget. In my life, I will never forget you and Vanessa in tap class. It was the first day we're all sitting there, and you two are ready to go. Yeah. There's people like me who are really, really nervous, and I can be extremely shy and didn't know what to do in this situation, and I didn't have a lot of friends my own age. It was one of those things, so I was terrified going in, and you and Vanessa, you guys are tapping all over the place and singing at everything. I thought, oh my God, they have so much confidence.
Yeah.
They can just do this.
Yeah.
You know, I would freak out doing different things. And then there were those there that just, no, this is my life. This is what I do.
I always think it's funny when people say that, when they look back and they say, you have so much confidence, because I never thought of like, I have to have confidence. I just had this go mentality
that
everything else was like blurry on the side. It was just like focus. And that came across as like, wow, you have confidence. And I think it was like, just determination,
determination. Well, I mean, that's, you just told us a story of determination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I dare anybody to try to top. Now, did you see other performances along the way? Were you able to?
I went to New York for the first time my freshman year in college because I wanted to see where I was going to live and be a part of. I wanted to be that world. And I remember going to it, and I just remember seeing Thoroughly Modern Millie. Mm-hmm. And I saw Sutton Foster, and I was obsessed with her. And I just thought, I have to go see her show. And I went to see the show, and I got to meet her afterwards because it was during the week of Broadway Cares and Equity Fights AIDS, and they do
explain with that how that
so
works.
once a year they do this charity where you can actually take pictures, you can auction out stuff from the musicals and whatnot and raise money for HIV and AIDS awareness and prevention. And I remember just going and I could buy a picture with Sutton Foster. Mm-hmm. And I remember waiting in line. I was like, I'm going to meet Sutton Foster. And I went up to her and I said, can we do the pose, the Thoroughly Modern Millie pose? Mm-hmm. And she couldn't do it because I guess legally they're like, she can get injured. It's like, you know, it's a meet and greet and stuff. She said, no, I can't do it. They won't let me do it.
And
she whispered in my
funny.
Ear. And I said, then I'm going to do it. And I was in the middle of the picture doing the Thoroughly Modern Millie pose. And she's next to me. Cut to years later, I'm on the same soundstage working on Eye Candy and she's working on Younger. Mm. On the set, my friend, one of my really close friends, Nico Tortorella, plays her love interest in that show and Younger. And he said, come over to visit me. I was like, oh, Sutton Foster's going to be. I was like, yeah, she plays my girlfriend. She's amazing. She's wonderful. And I went up to her and I said, I don't think you remember this, but when I was a kid, I went and said, I remember you. She goes, yeah, you asked for the pose and I couldn't do it. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, like, let's do it now. And we took
Oh my gosh.
I have
That's
a picture
so
of me and Sutton Foster finally doing the pose together, which meant the world to me and had full circle because I went to Broadway, this like, you know, bright eyed like kid, like trying to be part of this world. And it was surreal. Like I was like, I'm performing, but I'm doing television.
Wow.
And I'm not doing Broadway, but I'm filming in New York. I'm living in New York. So I manifested living there. I always said I want to live in New York and I want to perform in New York. I guess I should have been more clear with my thoughts because I said, I didn't say musical theater, you know? I said, I want to perform and I want to live in New York. And the universe like, here you go. And I was like, oh, I meant, well, you know what? I'll take it. Because I think
back.
I'm going to do theater. I'm going to do Broadway. It's just a different avenue that I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Harvey Guillen from TV and films, you know, because everyone's doing that now. But the difference is I will feel really confident when that opportunity comes because my training is theater and musical theater, as you know, opposed to some people who are television actors and film actors who go and do theater and sometimes it doesn't translate, it doesn't cross over.
Because they are different.
It's a different technique. It's absolutely different.
But I love that story about Sutton Foster, who I love too.
Love her.
And I've seen her a couple times in The Drowsy Chaperone.
I saw her in that as well, yeah.
And I saw her in Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein, Shrek, Little Women, all of those. Like,
and what a talent. But what she did with you when you were a kid and then remembering it gives some validity to my belief that how people treat kids, like young fans. I was a fan letter writer when I was a kid, and I found that the people who wrote back or took the time to do a kind gesture to a young person, if I've met them in my adult years, they've borne out that promise. You can't fool with that. If you take the time and she remembered you, it means not just that you made an impression, but that she's open and aware of her fans and aware of the effect she has on an audience and on the next generation.
Yeah. And I think she's great because she, you know, where she got started, she was in the chorus, you know, and got like promoted to be the lead in 30 Modern Millie. Like that was a huge thing. And it's so aspirational. I remember being in school and thinking, wow, what a story. You know, what are the, because you always hear those Hollywood stories, you know, like a Broadway darling, you know, gets discovered. But I'm a big believer that it's, you know, magic happens.
Well, she was doing Thoroughly Modern Millie the same time her brother, Hunter Foster, was doing Little Shop. And I went and saw Little Shop and I thought, what an incredible your brother and sister on Broadway leads.
At the same time.
Yeah.
That
what
is.
What a family.
Right? It's
it's
so incredible. Just incredible.
Yeah. And just looking back, it was just, that was the first time I really kind of felt this is what I want to do. When I went to New York for the first time my freshman year, it was just, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And looking back, I was like, wow, full circle. I was on a soundstage. I was performing. I'm her, you know,
her
counter equal, like, you know.
Your peers.
I'm a peer
Your
to Sutton Foster. And I was like, oh, what if, you know, if you told young teenage Harvey that, you know, I would have been like, that's crazy, you know, because I was, my dreams seemed so far away.
Remember that time you learned Japanese?
Oh, yeah.
Like, isn't it, like, you say like, oh, you know, just plan ahead. No, you went to Japan. It was a year and a half, right?
Yeah, it was like, it was 13 months. Okay. So the contract was 13 months and I got the job and I auditioned in America.
No. Not just you got the job.
Yeah.
How did this come about?
So I was at our school at AMDA, uh-huh. and I wasn't supposed to audition. And it was a Saturday morning. I was going through, we're not supposed to go through Backstage West. And I was going through Backstage West. But I used to, even though you can get it online, I used to like the tangible copy.
Oh, yeah.
Something about getting the tangible copy. Because I would do this in high school. I would go through the student films and I would highlight student films mm-hmm. that I was right
to
for.
To explain Backstage West, it was a tabloid type of newspaper.
Yeah, so Backstage West was what you can still get. It's where all... Basically, breakdowns are for non-union and some union work, but is where you're, if you're a struggling actor or just starting off, you can go there and it's a breakdown is basically an announcement for casting for mm-hmm. a project. It could mm-hmm. be a movie, a commercial, a music video. And so it'll say casting, student film, the long road ahead, looking for, you know, yep. Latino kid for play ages between 14 to 20. Mm-hmm. It must have brown eyes, must be less than 5'6". Like, they're so detailed. And you read this. So you're reading like the newspaper basically. Yeah. And you're finding out in this newspaper what part of this newspaper you're more relatable to. Mm-hmm. So it's a story. You're reading the story of like, oh, I could play that. You highlight that part. Oh, I'm a little bit short for that, but maybe I can fool it, you know, with the boot or something. So you really kind of like highlight, and I would send my headshot and resume to these people. And let's say you send out on a weekend, I would send probably like 26 headshots mm-hmm. and I would go maybe get 3 calls for an audition, and I get so excited about the audition. I go to the audition, I maybe get 1 call back, and I might book it or I might not. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So for everything, I would say, everything you see that I book, and you say, you're so lucky, you're constantly working. You don't see the 500 things I didn't get.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and people think it's such an easy thing. You're like, oh, you're a lead on a show and you're doing this. And I was like, you don't know that while that's happening, mm-hmm. you're still taping yourself for films yep. and for yep. other shows as guest stars and stuff. And people would say, well, no, take it easy. It's like, you cannot take it easy, because the second you think you're, oh, I'm fine, I made it, it's like, no, there's mm-hmm. someone just as hungry coming up behind you yep. who's just going to work just as hard. And so you got to have your, like, you know, work ethic continue, you know? Mm-hmm. I was thinking of like J-Lo, mm-hmm. you know, like J-Lo, it's like, how do you find time? Like, she just like killed it, you know, at the Grammys. And it's also like has a dance show and, you know, at residency in Vegas.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's aspirational, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. Jennifer Lopez to me is like, wow, you are, you know, like in still a mother, you know, and still, you know, a homebody, but still working. Like, it's like, whoa. Like, you can do it all. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You can do it all. And so I never want to hear people say, oh, I don't want to like send out submissions to Backstage West. I was like, then you're not meant to do this.
Then you don't care enough.
Then you don't care enough.
And that's the thing, is that's okay.
That's okay.
That's
I've had friends
totally
who've given up after mm-hmm. they've gone to one audition. After school, they go to one audition. It's because something happens when you go to school and you're the best at your high school. You become the best there. And then you go to a university or a conservatory or whatnot. And you're among a group of the best mm-hmm. of the best. And
I've so seen that, center stage.
Yeah. And
I
so
know how
we're
this
part
goes.
Of this. And so everyone has this like chip on the shoulder, like, yeah, I was my lead in my high school production.
Yeah,
and
so
I
was,
like,
was
no,
everyone
so was
else
everyone
here.
Else. Yep. And no one cares. No one cares. That was one mm-hmm. thing I learned, that when people put you into like, oh, he's a second year or he's a third year. And this program that I did at Citrus, they put you in order. So like the third years get first dibs at solos. And I said, in the real world, no one cares mm-mm. that yeah. you've been doing this for 10 years. If you're yeah. the best voice for the part, you will get it.
Yeah.
And that was something that I always fought with. I was like, I don't agree with that. And that's why a part of me was so like, rebellion, like I just wanted to audition for stuff, because I was like, if I'm good enough, I'll get cast, you yep. know. And I was good enough to get cast in Japan. I thought it was an American show, but it was being done in Japan, so I assumed it was in English.
Mm-mm.
And I got there and they gave me the script and they're like, here you go, dozo. And I was like, oh no, I think I got the director's script, this is in Japanese. And they're like, hi, dozo. I was like, go ahead, we open in 2 weeks. And it's like, what? No, the thing is,
yo no habla
well,
yeah, Japanese.
I was like, can we translate it? I speak Spanish, hablo español, you know, and yeah. it's like, no, it's Japanese. And so they give you someone to like go down, you know, phonetically to tell you what you're saying. But the description, I was like, so what am I saying here? Because, I mean, obviously I can phonetically sound it out and whatnot,
yeah, yeah.
but what is the line actually? Oh, here you're saying like, it's more emotional for fun, everyone's good time.
You're like, ah, oh, well, and then you.
Well, that, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm going to assume. Okay, great. And it was just getting lost in translation because they wanted to be so authentic to the words, you know? But it's like sometimes like the description, like, oh, so he's mad. Okay, got it. He's mad. And wait, but he's going to become sad. Okay, got it. So that was hard. You know, you're learning as
you go
along.
Was this an original piece?
No, it was not. It was like translating like Sesame Street Live, Wicked, and Blues Brothers.
Oh, my.
Remember he sang Sentimental?
Yeah, I was the swing for the wizard.
In Japanese.
With a white wig, a lot of makeup. Because the wizard was short and stout, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, in Japan, I was like, oh, perfect. And so I was learning three tracks. I was learning Jake Blues, the Blues Brothers, Sesame Street. I was the only kid because I looked like I was 12. Mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden, I looked like I was, you know, in the Blues Brothers when they put a little bit of, like, you know, 5 o'clock shadow. And then I looked like the wizard. Like, I aged three different generations in a lifespan within that 13-month contract. I started off as a 12-year-old boy, and I moved into like a 30-year-old man in Blues Brothers, and I turned into a 56-year-old man in Wicked. It was just like, if you can tell me that I wasn't versatile at that point, I would have laughed and said, you know, can you sing in, you know, Japanese, Sentimental Man? To this day, I can't, you know, not sing that song. If I hear it on, like, you know, a track or radio or something, it goes automatic, like, mm-hmm. into Japanese mode.
Wow.
Like, it's just in my head. Yeah.
Wow.
But I remember you came home. You went, amazing. Oh, I speak Japanese now.
Yeah, well, we lived in Kagedori, which was this area where all the foreigners are... the gaijin live for the foreigners. That's the word for gaijin. And we lived there, and everyone around us spoke Japanese. It wasn't like they're trying to become Western. You know, like they're not, they don't have to accommodate to us. You know, we live in your country, so we should learn your language, which makes total sense to me. So you went to the store, and not all people were speaking English, so you had to learn by asking, like, excuse me, where's sumasen, milk? Milk, you know, and making just like, what are you doing? And it's like, it's just, I had to learn, or you weren't gonna eat, gonna go grocery shopping. And
there's a motivation.
Yeah, there is a motivation. You'd be surprised how quickly you learn a language when you need to get somewhere or buy something.
Yeah.
And also, everyone was super nice and friendly. It's the friendliest country I've ever been to. And living there for 13 months, everyone couldn't have been nicer. I always felt like I would hope that America at that point would become, you know, what Japan is, where there was no threat of danger. Mm. The policemen don't carry guns. I like billy clubs. Like, it was like a 1920s Charlie Chaplin. Like, I had a friend who dropped their wallet and their camera in the subway, and they found them to their door. Like, they looked at the camera, realized it was a foreigner, looked at the pictures and said, obviously they're working here, put a puzzle together and showed up to the front door and knocked on their door and said, I think you dropped this 4 weeks ago. And who would do that?
Yeah.
I feel like I don't even drop things. I get mugged in the subway. it's like there's a difference. And so I just remember thinking, wow. And I was really hoping that was so what America would, you know, I was like, wow, they're always ahead of us. Like, Japan's always like five steps ahead of us in technology and everything. Because I remember coming back and they already had like the iPhone and we hadn't gotten it yet. And I was like, do you guys have that? And they're like, what are you talking about? Flip phone? People were like, flip phone. I was like, what are you?
This
like,
is my sidekick.
Had sidekicks, and that was at latest technology. And I was like, oh my God, we have no idea what's coming. Like, we have no idea.
So if it was culture shock going there, what did it feel like to come home?
Culture shock. It was, that's what it was. It was the opposite, you know, coming back and listening to what we were listening to, the news that was happening, because living away from America and not seeing what's presented in front of you as news every day, and all you get is like what people tell you, the major things, you know, there was a major earthquake or flood or what, but not seeing it every day and coming back and seeing how maybe slowly it was deteriorating. I think it was the beginning of what I saw being an unstitching, you know, and I was just, I remember coming back and thinking, this doesn't feel good, you know, and it was just starting to go down the slope. And now thinking back, I wonder if I went to Japan in the last couple of years and I came back now, and I can only imagine what people who are working there now come back and realize where we're at, what that does to them, you know, because it does, your mind is completely changed. You shifted to this Japanese culture. Everything's great. People are nice. People are coexisting. No one's, you know, a threat or feels like a threat of anything. And then you come back and you start looking over your shoulder.
And all hell done broke loose.
You start looking your shoulder. You start questioning walking down that street, you know, at night, mm-hmm. you start questioning being your authentic self in a certain area because your lifestyle may not be approved or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, it was definitely like, it was a culture shock coming back mm-hmm. again. Wow. Yeah. But I do love Japan, and I highly recommend if you haven't been to go. It's a great country. And mm-hmm. I've been so lucky. I always say if I can travel and work, I would be happy for the rest of my life.
That's the dream.
And that's the dream. And I've been lucky enough to do that. You know, yeah. Every time I book a movie or something, it takes me out of the state or the country. It's great. We shot this in Toronto. Mm-hmm. It takes place in Staten Island, but we shot in Toronto. We shot the pilot here in LA, but we shot the series in Toronto. And I'd never been to Toronto except for one time. And it wasn't even Toronto. It was like North Bay. It was like 5-hour drive up mm-hmm. north. So it wasn't really that city feel. And I love Toronto. And I was just like, I would have never gotten that experience because in the back of my head, I would have never planned a trip to Toronto.
Of course, yeah.
And you know,
it's a great city.
Yeah, even small towns. Like we shot in a small town in Alabama last year for a horror film. And people were so friendly and nice and just a different state. And there's different rules and there's different mentalities. And mm-hmm. sometimes you're like, okay, so I'm in a bubble, like in LA. Mm-hmm. We are so fortunate and we're kind of spoiled that we live in LA and mm-hmm. and we do live in this bubble a little bit. But even then, like, I feel like now that bubble is getting burst, mm-hmm. even in LA. Like, I'm hearing mm-hmm. stories of, like, how is that happening
here?
Yeah,
seriously.
And mm-hmm. I'm always shocked about the stories that I'm hearing that happen in Echo Park, you know, or down the street. We're like, what? No, that we live in LA. That's not us. That's not who we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now it's spreading everywhere, so it's good. But it's good to go and travel, I feel, to just learn new cultures.
And this is the thing, is it's not even like you have to go far. You know, it's not the kind of thing where you could say to somebody, well, it's cheap to go to England. No, of course it's not.
Yeah.
Go to West Covina.
Right.
Take a small day trip, outside of the bubble.
Just go somewhere else.
And I love travel. You should go travel somewhere.
Okay. Now, you've maintained, obviously, your positivism. you radiate that, Harvey.
Oh, thank you.
And, it's not a compliment. It's just the truth.
Yeah, right. You are not being complimented right now.
No. I mean it as a compliment, of course. But it's just who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you maintain that when things aren't going so great? And when you know, everybody has ups and downs.
Yeah.
And in this business, which is such a nutty business, mm-hmm. there's so much rejection involved for an actor.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your rudder? What keeps you on course?
I think, it sounds so cliche, but like you surround yourself with positive people.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we got when mm-hmm. we met. I don't like to surround myself with people who, people have bad days,
mm-hmm.
but you make a choice and you either, you know, drown in your sorrows and woe is me and you become a martyr. Nobody wants to be around that mm-mm. for too long. And mm-hmm. so I always, you know, offer to help if someone's in need. But if that is constantly the role that you're playing and you're choosing to play, then I'm doing no good and disservice to myself and to you by staying connected to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're draining from my well. And my well is running dry because I'm trying so hard to help you. We're here to help each other as human beings, but you can only help people so much until they want to help themselves. And I've learned that along the way because, again, I don't forget where I came from. You know, I was collecting trash to pay for my class. Uh-huh. So when someone complains about something, I could easily say, like, well, you haven't had it like that, you know. But I don't
do that
because everyone's going through something and it's their own journey.
You always say, we don't know what anyone else is going through.
When people say, you're always cheery, and so, and because I make a choice to be. I have bad days too. And I also share those bad days, you know, because I want to show that it's not all sunshine and rainbow. You know, that's not what it is. And so, especially for an actor, you know, there's been days when you're down to like your last $20 in your bank account, you know, mm-hmm. and people are like, oh, I just saw you in the film. This guy was like, that was shot last year. You know what I mean? And it's like, you don't know what the struggling actor is going through. And I feel like people have this idea that once you are on a show or have a movie that you're made, you're a millionaire. Oh, yeah. And it's that is not mm-mm. the way it works.
Yeah.
And also, especially now, because there's so much content now that it's not like in the 80s, where if you were a film star, you probably were a millionaire. You know, you were making millions as a film star. Now we have movie stars who are doing TV shows. Mm-hmm. So the trickling down has pushed things down. And so they're taking a pay cut, and everyone said, oh, well, the A-lister is doing a pay cut to do a TV show, then you'll do it for pennies. You know what I mean? And so the amount that people think, the idea that came with being a star before, where automatically if you got a one big break, you became a millionaire, you're set for life. That is not
mm-mm.
the reality.
Mm-hmm.
You have to constantly be working just to basically make, you know, like the basic means, you know?
Yeah.
And so people don't see that. It's like, if you're a working actor, you are so fortunate. I'm never taking it for granted and I'm never, you know, too good for anything. So it's like, I always look at like, what the things I have now are the things I used to wish for. And that should always be what you should look at.
Yeah.
The things I have now were always things I used to wish for, and keep that mentality going, because as big as you get, as much accolade or, you know, as much money as you get, like, you remember that it wasn't always like that, and you always wish for this and wish for better, but don't think that it's always going to be smooth sailing.
Right. Yes.
And
what
plan.
What about the audition process? How did you, and how do you still, see again, how it's still happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you deal with audition and rejection?
I've learned, you know, when I was younger, I remember being devastated when I felt I was right for the part and I didn't get it. And I remember just really coming down on myself, which motivated me to work harder, to take an extra class, take whatever. Now I'm so confident in my craft that I can go into, and if I've done the work, you have to do the work, obviously, and I put it out, that is all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally all you can do. You walk away from it and you say, this is what I think. Because I've learned that I've booked things for roles that weren't right for me because I did the work and I went in thinking, what about this if he was this? And people are like, I never thought of it like that. Maybe he is. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. who he is. And it's like, there you go. So I don't go in trying to fit a mold of what I think they want. Mm-hmm. I go in doing the work, thinking this is, if I'm the thespian who's doing the work for this, then I should know what the character is. Mm-hmm. And so when I walk in and I do the work and I say, here's my, you know, report, you're going to grade my report however you want. You're going to give me an F, you're going to give me an A+, but I did the work with the research that I had and with the sources that I had to my best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
That is my report. I'm going to have to accept the consequences of the report. And either you're going to love that you got an A or you're going to hate that you got an F, but you did your best. And as long as you do your best in whatever you do, you're never going to regret it.
Yeah.
So walk away from it. Just do the report, put it in at the table, and then walk away and check the grade later, and you might be surprised. Mm-hmm. But never, like, dwell on the F, because you did the report. You did the best. That's going to be up to them to decide what your grade is. So look at it that way, I say.
Mm-hmm. We had Winnie Holzman on last week.
Oh, I love it.
You know, you were on Huge, which was one of her shows. That is what's crazy.
That was my first show that was my platform.
That's the thing, is there, obviously, we have a lot of friends who are actors, performers, and growing up here, and you didn't grow up far, a lot of people you know do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I always feel like you always need to be excited. Like, mm-hmm. I am always excited when I see one of my friends on TV or in a film. That's thrilling to mm-hmm. me. And that's why, you know, when I'll send you, I am the person who takes pictures of TVs. I am that guy.
I'll repost
who
it.
Who takes pictures
to
of TVs because I'm just going, yeah, that's so-and-so over there and that's so-and-so over there. This is so exciting.
Yeah.
You know, I saw you were on iZombie and then I watched a Netflix horror movie and you were in that.
Yeah, Truth or Dare.
Yeah, which, oh my God. But it's all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And people work really hard.
I always say if you're not excited, then you shouldn't be doing it.
That's mm-hmm. it, though. That's
I always say the second you're bummed about it, because you're going to have bad days. Going back to what you said earlier, you're going to have bad days. But if your bad days are outweighing the feeling you get from performing, even if it is in a class or a 99 seater, I always said if you're going to be a performer, you should be happy to perform for a black box, a 99 seater, or for millions of people on the screen. Yeah. If you don't get the same excitement from both, then you probably shouldn't be doing it because, you know what I mean? You really shouldn't. It's what you love to do. And if it's not what you're loving to do, then find something else. By all means, go find something else. It's not worth the headache
the
heartache and the tears and the sweat because you're not happy. Go do something else.
Yeah. It's...
And for you, obviously, it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm so grateful. I think that I just set my mind on it, and keeping that energy and the positive energy is just always so important to just go forward and, like, really do, you know, what you're meant to do, whatever that is. Just do what you're happy. I just realized that I had nothing to lose when I was younger.
Absolutely.
And so I had everything to gain. So everything I do get, it's like just the cherry on top every time.
Absolutely.
I hope you understand the spirit in which I'm asking you this question. But when you're on a set, you know, or even sitting here, and you finish a can of Mountain Dew, do you throw it away? do you crush it?
I still recycle and collect. And yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have a bin in my kitchen that now I pass it on to my sister, because my sister's a writer, and I give her my bag of recycles every week, and she sells them. It's a true story.
Good going.
Incredible.
Good going.
Incredible. I'm so proud of you, and I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
And I'm thrilled that we get to see the show at South By and be there and experience that together, because that is just That's the goal of all the stuff. That's the goal, and you've done it.
Thank you. So. I'm so excited. I'm so glad that I've, like, you know, stay in touch with my friends from school who I'm so glad that are, like, so supportive. It's always, like, you know, it's hard to, like, be an actor in L.A. and, like, people say, you have to be supportive of everyone, but it's hard to find people who are, like, authentically, genuinely supportive of you, you know, because everyone's this jealousy thing. I don't think there should be a jealousy because if you're good enough for something, you're right for the role, you're going to get it. You know,
exactly.
I always say that to the actor friends.
Yeah.
For me, I like to think that I've, like, made a career playing different characters. You're talking about a horror film and also iZombie, where he plays like a IT guy.
Yep.
I like to not just play the cookie cutter because for so long I was told you're only going to play the Latino, like, chubby this.
Friend,
insert
right,
this. Friend, yeah. Plumber, this. And I've made a career saying, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not going to just play that. I can play that, and I'll play it really well, but it's going to be on my choice to do that. So, you know, but I will not do that. I want to play where you see me, like, I saw you in a horror film. I saw you in a comedy. Did I see you in a kid show? I thought I saw you in a commercial. Are you in a mockumentary? That's the goal.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
You're doing it, honey. You're doing all of it.
And how do people follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram and on Twitter under the same name, Harvey Guillen.
And the Instagram is a lot of fun because he's always showing behind-the-scenes stuff from sets and auditions and all that.
Yeah.
Spell that name so everyone knows.
Yes. Spell your last name.
H-O. Last name is G-U-I-L-L-E-N. People always pronounce it differently.
Guillen.
Yeah,
Mickey French,
so Harvey Guillen. Yeah, we had a teacher at our school who said, Harvey Guillen? And I was like, who's that? They sound fancy.
Where did you come from? Oh, man. Yeah, I'm Jenny Martin, so it's okay. I'm just used to it. I'm just used to it now.
And we are...
Okay, we are at... Well, that was him attempting to lead me into our socials. He is at Leonard Maltin. I'm at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can always go to leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff.
And that's the truth. Harvey, thanks so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
We wish you every success.
Thank you.
And we encourage people to look out for Things We Do in the Dark.
What we do in the shadows.
I knew it. See, that's why I got it wrong. That's why I hesitated before.
But you should look out for both things. Things We Do in the Dark, we should look out for those things, but also look out for what we do in the shadows.
See, I have a mental block
That was a
there.
Public service announcement, too.
I have a mental block about that time. Funny. Anyway, see it. It looks like it's going to be great fun. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Maltin on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.